Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, rock journalist and producer David Wilde talks about personal stories between him and Prince.
As the meeting is wrapping up, he literally looks at us and he goes, "All right, that was good. You guys want to have a little private concert?" And we went, "What?" And he summoned some, I'm sure, attractive two ladies or sisters to put two chairs in the rehearsal hall. And he got up and he did an hour concert with us 2-3 feet away just for us. And so I had a two-person Prince private concert. At the end of it, he goes, "Hold on, David. When we first met, you were a journalist. So I want you to sign a non-disclosure form that you won't talk about this." And I went, "Prince, you have to get me to sign a non-disclosure form before you do that."
Today on the show, rock journalist and producer David Wilde shares stories about getting a private concert with Prince. Stay close.
Hi, this is David Wilde, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, last week, I was able to have Larry King on the show. I checked in with Larry to see how he was doing in quarantine, and he's just such a funny guy. David, you know Larry?
I have had the pleasure of meeting him and eating at one of his bagel joints, yes.
Oh, that is so cool. In New York?
Oh, no, in Beverly Hills. Who knows what's going to be left when they come back, but he has a bagel place in Beverly Hills.
Do you know I didn't know that? What's it called?
Now you're putting me on the spot.
No, but is it like a diner or just straight bagels?
It's a straight like bagel deli where he, I only went so because he would often be at the front table with his friends. I think when he left Nate and Al's, I don't know if there was some revolution and maybe he walked out and down a mile, he created his own bagel joint.
I don't think I realized that. I'm going to ask him about it because he and I have actually become a little bit of friends. And he's done the show 3 times now, including he was a judge on Story Smash, as you were.
I actually am quarantined with Larry King, so I can go get him and ask him. Yeah, I didn't want to be the oldest Jew in my lockdown.
Listen, I got to tell you, man, it is so crazy, everything shutting down. It's just unbelievable. And Larry King, you know, of course, he's never seen anything like this in his life as well. And he's just super funny, has a great attitude, and he shares all sorts of crazy stories about Trump, of course. And then I ask him about Tiger King. So it gets good.
I listen to it. I'm a show. I'm a Storyworthy listener, of course.
Thanks, David. I didn't realize that. Well, anyway, you guys, go back and listen to Larry if you haven't. But not now. Not today.
But not today.
Not today, because you're here with me and one of my very favorite people in the world, David Wilde. David Wilde, you guys. He's a music critic. He's a writer. And now he's a producer. And he's been a producer for years now. And I got to tell you, here's why I love David Wilde so much. Are you ready, David Wilde?
Yeah. Let me get my wife. She needs to hear this.
No, I just think you're one of the only people I've ever known who is living a dream. Okay. Do you agree?
I do get to live many of my dreams, and my wife is living her nightmare. So it balances out.
You guys are great together. I just saw a photo of her the other day on Instagram or something, or maybe Facebook. I forget.
Twitter.
It was adorable. She's so cute. She's so pretty.
I agree.
But anyway, I guess what I mean is that, you know, you wanted to be surrounded by rock stars your whole life, and now you're surrounded by rock stars. It's just incredible. And I love all the people you get to meet. It's so exciting. And so today you're going to be talking about Prince. And so you're bringing stories from Prince today. And of course, you just had that special on, which was really great. The Grammy Salute to Prince. It was on CBS last week twice. And now you guys can get it on CBS All Access. But you also, of course, you know Prince personally. You knew him. And I know you've got some great stories, so I'm anxious to hear them.
Absolutely. But, looking forward to it.
But before we talk about Prince, David, I got to have you tell the story-worthy story of when you invited me down to the, I think it was the Shriners Auditorium, to hear
the Shrine.
The Shrine.
Yes.
To hear the Boss.
Yeah, that was a special event, a concert we did to end racial trouble. And amazingly, it didn't work. But it was a great event attempting to make a statement. And it was a remarkable group of artists. But Bruce agreed to open it up with a sort of multi-artist performance. And yes, I invited you. I think it was Phil Rosenthal. Did I invite anyone else to come? I'm not sure.
Lynette Carolla. She was there, of course.
Yes, the Bruce.
She's like the biggest fan ever.
Right. And didn't Bruce walk down from the stage and whisk her away? And I don't think she's never been seen again.
Here's the thing. I'm sitting right beside Lynette Carolla. And the Boss is honestly 6 feet in front of me is Bruce Springsteen. When he speaks, you could drop a pin. It is so silent. And then his voice comes out and it's just a soft whisper. And he says, you know, all right, let's go. And then the band just cranks up and he's just stunning. He's so stunning. I can barely breathe. I can't believe it's in front of me. And then do you remember what happened?
You tell me. You're probably, I think I was working. I might have been running around.
I had to leave.
Oh, right. Yes.
Because my parking meter was running out, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And the ticket is $65. Could I forget that ticket and just stay and meet the Boss? No. Because Jack Blackburn is looking down on me and he would say, no, you don't get that parking ticket. So I leave. As soon as I leave, who comes off the stage?
I think Bruce.
And he goes right down to Lynette. And then when I got home, of course, I did not have a ticket. I see Lynette and Bruce on Facebook.
That's a moment. I'm sure Lynette is talking about it right now still.
It's like sometimes I don't sleep because of the coronavirus. And sometimes I don't sleep because I passed up meeting Bruce Springsteen for $60.
I feel your pain.
You do not feel my pain. You have no idea what I'm talking about.
Oh, no. I've had moments like, I mean, this is not quite, but, you know, I'm from New York, New Jersey. So, like, Bruce and the first artist that meant a lot to me because he was my mom's favorite was Neil Diamond. And yeah. I found myself knowing Neil and working with Neil. And there was one time I'll never forget where my wife and I, when our kids were little, went down to the House of Blues for it was his birthday, and he invited us to sit at his table, and it was Super Diamond, the band Super Diamond, and Jack Black, and some others. And Neil, at like 10 o'clock, said to me, he goes, don't go anywhere. I'm going to get on stage and jam with Super Diamond, the tribute band. And I was like, this is great. And my wife goes, sorry, Neil, we have a babysitter. I told her we'd be home by 11, so we're going to leave. And in the age of Uber, I would have said, bye, you know, and taking an Uber, but also trying not to be a bad dad. I left. And
a lot of pressure there.
And I'm still mad at her.
And you still talk about that.
Well, we do. Yeah, we talk about there's a lot of issues, frankly.
Now, listen, what could possibly be the discrepancy about Larry?
No, I think there's a certain, you know, love triangle with Larry staying in the house during this pandemic.
He's single. And let's face it, David, you're rich, but you ain't that rich. You know what I'm saying?
I know Prince, but I'm not a king.
Do you know, I got the pleasure to interview Sugar Ray Leonard. And then I actually went on to get to know him a little bit because we were working on this podcast together that did not come to fruition. It was called The Fight of Your Life with Sugar Ray Leonard. It's a damn good idea.
If you called it Foxy Boxing with Sugar Ray Leonard, it would still be on.
Anyway, one day we were talking and he was talking about wealth. And he said something about, oh yeah, I got a nice house, Christine, but you should see the house up the street. And it was some NBA player that I don't know, but he was like, now that's a house.
Yeah, no, I, you know, it's funny, like living in LA, you get really aware of that sort of thing.
Where do you live?
I'm not saying.
Malibu.
No. Hills.
Okay.
The hill.
Okay. There's a lot of hills. So it's big. Vague enough. Now, the last time you came on Storyworthy, you talked about Van Morrison in truly one of the most interesting stories I've ever heard about a rock star. And it was just basically the way he avoided being interviewed.
Yes. He was always running away from me. And I love him for it.
So how do you find most, you know, as it were, rock stars or country stars or whatever, how do you find most people approach an interview with you or when you used to write for Rolling Stone?
Yeah, it's very different. A lot of them I've come to know in different ways. Like some don't like the journalist experience that much, but if you're collaborating with them on a TV production, it's a whole different dynamic. Like Bob Dylan, I had the experience of literally being asked to come meet with him, and he's my hero, and my older son is named after him. I mean, he's the guy, and he was coming from an interview with Rolling Stone when he came in, and he walked in. I was in his hotel room, and he came back in, waiting for him, and he said, David, fucking interviews, and I went, you know, I do those too. But he goes like, people still asking me why I went electric. How interesting. And I thought, oh boy. And then we had like a creative talk about a project he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And that he wanted me to write up a treatment for. And, but it's fascinating. Yeah. I've had the good fortune. In fact, my story today is about exactly that. Cause it involves how I first met Prince and then some of the things that were mind-blowing. But one of the cool things about my life is I wasn't a particular asshole as a journalist. So as a result, when I started working with these people in different ways, they didn't hate me too much. There might be one or two exceptions, but for the most part, it's good karma not to have been a douchebag as a journalist.
Yeah, it seems really counterintuitive to be a douchebag if you need something from somebody, doesn't it?
Well, you should. I remember Steven Tyler once telling me about another journalist. He goes, I like you because he goes, you know, I'm the rock star. You don't have the rock star attitude. But there was a point when journalists, like especially well-known journalists, would come in with a lot of rock star attitude. And
yeah,
that's now that journalism doesn't pay. Yeah,
that's really funny. Well, it's interesting because there are different approaches in terms of like saying, okay, Joe Rogan has his podcast. Even though, you know, yes, he brings on incredible guests, incredible scientists and physicists, it's still about him. He's the star. Same with Marc Maron. Marc is kind of still the star. When I feel like I do a story worthy, listen, now I'm talking about story worthy. No, but I do try to highlight other people. In fact, to me, it's just intuitive that if you're trying to get something out of somebody, you would not talk about yourself.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it works different ways. Sometimes if you're vulnerable and open up, that can help. But it's not, I don't know. I think the greatest, I mean, it's like there is an element of non-sexual seduction about the whole process. And it's like, if they like you, they will share more. Like my wife, I married her she married me because when I went out on the road with the McCartneys, you know, 28 years ago or whatever it was, on a tour with Linda and Paul, she, for some reason, over the course of like 2 weeks, we were in South America and Colorado, and then we came back through New York and New Jersey, and she goes, I like you. She goes, do you have a girlfriend? And I said, I just actually met this great girl. We've gone on a few dates, and she's in New York. She goes, I want to meet her, and I want you to bring her to soundcheck tomorrow, and then we'll have lunch. And my wife, who's not my wife had one, when I met her, had one, the only album she had was a cassette of About Last Night, the soundtrack.
That was so upsetting.
Not at all. Now she's a music scholar. Like,
good.
To some degree. But Linda then said, at the end of that lunch, she said, do you think I know, she pulled me aside. She goes, do you think I know about marriage? And I'm like, yeah, you have a good one, unlike my parents. And she goes, marry that girl right away. And I did. And I owe Linda McCartney a lot of credit.
It's an unbelievable story. It really is.
And that's not the story.
I know, but just that little, I knew that about you, that Linda McCartney introduced you to your wife. I mean, essentially, she did it, but she secured the deal. Yes. She's the one who told you, and of course you took her advice. And I'm just saying, I can't believe your first child wasn't named Stella. No?
Well, he's a boy, so that would have been awkward.
Well, it would have been, but still, you know. Yeah. Anyway, listen, I'm so excited to hear your story. And I do have one more question for you before we get to your story. Why did you stop doing Adam Carolla's show?
I've never spoken about it, and Adam and I have communicated, and it's not like we don't, and I hope that as of November 4th or whatever, the day after Election Day, my hope is I could return. I just found the political climate, you know, I didn't feel comfortable being on a show with Dinesh D'Souza, right-wing pundits who,
it's too much.
And I got into a political argument, a heated discussion, and I actually got for a day or two death threats.
Wow.
And I said, and my family said, this is not worth
that's
it.
That's absurd.
But that's not Adam. And that's not.
No, I know.
The
but
show.
Still,
there,
once
I like
that,
the people.
You got to back out. Yeah. It's just like, it's not.
Yeah, I need to get paid to die. And that was
saying.
It took the joy out of it right away.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It takes the joy out of it. I totally agree.
But we're cool. It's just.
Yeah, I get it.
I just didn't think it was a good venue for me.
Trust me, he won't even think twice that anything ever happened. It would never occur to him to think that another person, I mean anybody, would come to his mind in terms of his feelings, their feelings, because he doesn't have that empathy thing. He has, it's just a different, he wouldn't have that.
Yeah. Listen, I don't feel that way. It's not him, but I will say, I never complained to him about any of that. He was aware that the argument became big, it went viral slightly. If you're not enjoying that experience, why do it?
Yeah, it's not worth it. I agree. I listen to a lot of different podcasts, and recently I was listening to Joe Rogan, and he said some stuff, and I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? What am I doing? And then I turned it off. I haven't listened since. So that I knew he said stuff like that, and I knew he had opinions like that. But I guess I just thought, well, I haven't heard him yet. I mean, I haven't heard him, and I love the people he talks to. I'm so impressed with his guests. So anyway, whatever.
Well, unfortunately, our last month or two is proof that this shit matters. Like there are consequences to spreading stupid, ignorant and thoughts. And like I have lost people I loved, from artists. I mean, the musical community, John Prine. I was supposed to be honoring him. I was with him at the Grammys, honoring him last weekend with his Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. I loved him. Adam Schlesinger on Valentine's Day, seeking a cheap date. My wife and I went to a club show and saw Adam. And to think that, you know, just to think of those two being gone now because of the stupidity of not getting the right information out there.
Exactly. And did you know if John got sick? Like, did you know when he got sick?
Fiona, his wife, went public. The news was that she had it, I think. And then she went public with what was going on. And anyone who follows me on Twitter at Wild About Music will know I just decided if I played John Prine music around the clock, which I do quite often before all this, that he would hold on. And I'm just heartbroken because, you know, Jason Isbell, who's my favorite songwriter now, had already agreed to do a song for him. We were going to Fiona. John was so excited about being honored. I had Bonnie Raitt, worked with Bonnie Raitt on Honor Him on the Grammys this year.
Oh, wow.
But I'm just heartbroken. And
yeah, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, it's not my, it's,
well, but still, I mean, there's things, but of course, but it's also like, it's just a ripple effect. I mean, everything gets affected. I'm so sorry. And right. also the fact that you do so many live venues, you've been doing the Grammys for like 20 years. So all these huge venues, and who knows when we're going to get back to that.
Oh no, it's crazy. Like seeing, you know, yeah, I am, my life is doing these giant events, and like, we don't, who knows? No one knows. Planning anything right now is,
it's the craziest thing.
Other than a podcast.
Yeah. What do you miss most? Like just, you know, little stuff even.
I'm a, beyond working on these shows, I probably, since my kids have gone to college,
yeah,
I go to maybe 3 or 4 concerts a week. And, my wife is not in so much into that. So I literally go a lot, and I'll park in Beverly Hills in the neighborhood and walk a mile to the Troubadour and go see, you know, anyone on any given night. And,
amazing.
Or I'll go, yeah, I miss music. I miss, but yeah.
You're always out and about. Yeah. I always see, I mean, I see, you know, the improv, you even come by, and different gigs.
I miss That's all fun. Of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I miss that too, but I really miss food. Like, I mean, I could cook some things, but oh my God, I just need to go to Hyperion Public now.
Yeah. At the Springsteen show you mentioned, Phil Rosenthal was there. He and I have had lunch almost every week for 10 years, 15, wow. 20 years. Yeah. We've been doing, and so it's like, I did do a podcast with him for the Prince show, and I did, but like, yeah, not having lunch with Phil is rough.
Aw, have you seen his new dog, that dog Murray?
Well, the Daily Murray on
He's
his Twitter.
He's so cute. Yeah, I exactly. love that dog. That's a great feed. All right, you guys, before we get to David's story, I wanted to remind you to find me over there on Twitter at Storyworthy. And yes, find David over there as well at Wild About Music. And then, of course, head over to storyworthypodcast.com and join my mailing list. Would you do that, please? You're in quarantine. You can't tell me you have anything better to do. So right now, storyworthypodcast.com, and then you click the button, hello, it's me, and I'm going to write you one sweet letter a week. That's it, one sweet letter. All right, you guys, he's here right now, David Wild. We've been talking to him. He's been on the show before. David is a Peabody Award-winning rock writer and a producer who has produced hundreds of music shows, like we talked about, music award shows and tribute shows, like that recent Let's Go Crazy, the Grammy Salute to Prince. And you are also, like we said, a rock journalist at Rolling Stone when it was like the coolest thing in the world. And then you just, like we said, you knew everybody. You spent time with everybody. David Bowie, Hall & Oates, as you said, Paul McCartney, Morrissey. It just goes on and on. Hundreds of interesting people, which makes you one of the most interesting people I know. He's here right now, you guys, wherever you are. Put your hands together for David Wild.
Today's story is sort of a rambling one because it's sort of the journey my life has taken to date with Prince. As Christine mentioned, like I've had the pleasure of meeting and working with a lot of my heroes, and I am aware of how that is a dream for many. But with Prince, it's kind of a little different because, like, McCartney was a legend before I was aware of that. Bob Dylan was playing and singing before I was aware of him. Prince is the superstar that happened in my life.
Generation. In your generation.
I was in college. I think it was freshman year, sophomore year, I fell hard for Prince. And I remember, I think I fell in love with Dirty Mind and Controversy, which were the new sort of records that were, he was beginning to cross over from R&B into the rock world and to begin his rise that would just keep going for years. But I remember buying one of the albums, and there was a poster in it of him in a shower and wearing like a G-string. Wow. And I put it up in my dorm room, and my roommates were very confused. They were like, but that's what Prince did. He just crossed all those boundaries. So cut to, I graduated and I went to Esquire magazine. And then 2 years later, Jan Wenner brought me to Rolling Stone. And my first time meeting Prince was I was sent, or maybe I sent myself, to Paris for the opening of the Love Sexy tour. And if it sounds, you might think it was really cool to go to Paris and cover Prince, and you would be 100% right. It was like, there could be nothing better in my book. And it was, he was playing a big like arena. And after the first show, someone comes over in that mysterious way. Prince always had like beautiful girls working for him who would just rush up and say, Prince would like to invite you to the after party. So then went to some, and I would love to find out exactly where this was, but my memory is that it was like a little island somewhere in Paris, like in a park.
The Pont-Neuf Bridge, on the Pont-Neuf Bridge?
I don't know, but I do remember I was brought over to meet Prince for the first time with Kurt Loder, who had been a Rolling Stone writer, but was now at MTV. And Kurt, super cool guy, much cooler than me. Kurt stepped on Prince's foot. And that meant that that might have cut our conversation short. But as we were walking away, and Prince said, I'm playing later if you want to come. And this is now like 1 in the morning, at 1:30 in Paris. And it was like later. And he did a after party show off the Champs-Élysées, a little club. I think it was called Le Bain Douche. And I think I looked up, the great thing about now is you can Google and find the set list. And I found the set list.
Wow.
That was like the beginning of knowing the guy. He reached out to me and asked me to make suggestions for what should be on his hits B-sides anthology. So when that album came out, it had a credit. It said, A Penny for Your Thoughts, ... David Wilde, and a couple other critics. And I, for years, thought Prince thanked me. And when we started doing this show, working on the tribute, I looked at it, it's like, oh no, it was A Penny for Your Thoughts. So my thought was, I never got a penny, but I will thank him and repay the debt with this Prince show. So that began working with him on a number of TV shows. The most interesting one.
Wait a second. Could we just back up 1 second? Because I want to know that night in Paris, which, by the way, that city doesn't sleep. So
right.
It's so cosmopolitan, especially in the summertime. It just seems, first of all, where it is, where it sits, the latitude of it, I don't know how you say it, but is very north. And so it stays light in Paris till 10, 11 o'clock at night. And then it does go. It goes all night long.
I do remember getting out of the club. And I thought it was like, I think sunrise was happening as I left the concert.
Wow.
And it was fantastic.
How many people were there? I mean, was it 50, 100?
100, 150 kind of thing.
Wonderful.
I think.
So you're with your friend and you both get to go.
No. I mean, I think it was just a bunch of Parisians and maybe a few critics.
Oh, wow. How great is that? Okay. So then after that night, he gives you his card. You give him your card. I mean, how does he call you or does he email you?
Oh, no. Prince, like, as I remember it, he didn't have a phone. He had people who had phones. And, you know, if you heard from him, I forget how it happened. The next story that I can clearly remember every moment of is that, because the Paris show was the best concert I ever saw until many years later, I'm working on the Grammys, and it's probably my, like, 10th year working on the Grammys, something like that. And I'm with Ken Ehrlich, the executive producer. And we're in the office, and he goes, it's Prince. And we're summoned, because we had approached him about being on the Grammys, and Ken had reached out. And he goes, I want to have a meeting. You and David Wilde come over to the rehearsal hall. And so we drove over to this rehearsal space. We are brought in, and we sit down and have a very fascinating, like, half an hour, 45-minute meeting where we're creatively talking about what he might do. And what he ended up doing, what came out of that discussion was Prince and Beyonce opening the Grammys. And when I'm very happy and proud to be any part of what is considered, like, when Prince passed, the moments that everyone – there's three moments it seems like everybody talks about.
Yeah.
The Super Bowl in the rain – the While My Guitar Gently Weeps Rock and Hall of Fame guitar solo, and the Prince Beyonce moment that was, I think, sort of a kickoff moment for this sort of second, third coming of Prince. But the greatest thing for me about that day was, like, I remember a couple things. I remember that There was news stories at the time that Prince was in financial trouble. So when we were brainstorming, at one point I made the faux pas of saying, listen, we don't want to spend too much money because, you know, we don't have all that much and we don't want to spend too much of your money. And he gave me a dirty look like, you know, motherfucker, I got money.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe another penny for your thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So then the great thing was, as the meeting is wrapping up, he literally looks at us and he goes, all right, that was good. You guys want to have a little private concert? And we went, what? And he summoned some, I'm sure, attractive two ladies or sisters to put two chairs in the rehearsal hall. And he got up and he did an hour concert with us 2-3 feet away just for us, and sort of worked through what he might do on the Grammys and do some other great, great songs. So I had a 2-person Prince private concert. And the great thing was, at the end of it, and this brought it full circle to meeting him as a journalist, at the end of it, he goes, hold on, David. When we first met, you were a journalist. So I want you to sign a non-disclosure form that you won't talk about this. And I went, Prince, you have to get me to sign a non-disclosure form before you do that. And he sort of smiled and winked. And it's funny because in our subsequent, like in the meetings we've had, I think we had, I had the pleasure a number of times of working with him. And like one time it was on some award show and he was giving an award, I think, to Renee Zellweger. And it was the biggest rain in the history of Los Angeles. And there were like houses falling down hills. And I pitched him telling a joke because we were working on, I was writing what he would say with him. And I pitched him a joke about, hey, what about this purple rain we're having? And he went, funny, no. And like, and the last meeting we had was when he gave an award, I think it's 2017, to Beck for like, in January 2017 or 2016, his last appearance on the Grammys was presenting Album of the Year. And together we wrote this thing, he said, which is ended up in the special of like, albums still matter, because I'm a lover of albums. I know you've got Neil Young behind you. You're a lover of albums. And I wanted him to say something about albums. So together we wrote a thing where he said something like, albums like Black Lives still matter. And that got into a lot of news stories over the years. And like, that's one of my collaborations with Prince, quote unquote. And I love, and like, I've gotten to write either little comedy songs or things with Stevie Wonder, Prince. I've gotten to co-write things like that. And that's like, for someone like me, that's the dream, is how lucky am I to like literally on some little way with them being geniuses and me definitely not being one, I've gotten to work and collaborate with these guys.
Yeah, but wait a minute, David, you have a tremendous amount of talent because you're able to...
Where?
Come on, what are you talking about, man? You're able to facilitate all this and they listen to you and you're like very, you're a laid back guy, but you're also a regular dude, but you're also very, very smart. So you're like the perfect blend of like not a hanger on, but I mean, somebody to have around. Do you know what I mean? Like you're perfect. You're not going to interrupt. You're never going to be a horrible person. You're never going to be a douchebag. You know what I mean?
If you could just edit that part, you're perfect, and send that to my wife. See if that helps.
I have a feeling you and your wife have a tremendous amount of laughs. That's what I think.
Yes, we do.
Here's the thing. When you talk about Prince, you light up. I can see you now on this. The way we're recording. You look so happy when you talk about him.
We started working on the show in December. And usually when you work on one of these specials or you write a book about someone, you will burn yourself out on their catalog. I cannot burn myself out on Prince. It's my music. It's like my guys are my guy. My guys include women, but like there's people, Bob Dylan, Prince, Stevie Wonder, Elvis Costello of a certain era. That stuff I can never get sick of. Joni Mitchell, Neil Young is for you.
For me, yeah, absolutely. Now, you've also done a lot of, I want to go back to Prince, but also You do a lot of, well, you used to do a lot of co-hosting on Rock Solid, the podcast.
Yeah.
You've done several, right?
I did a special Prince podcast and put it out. Pat Francis, our mutual friend, was nice enough to put it out because I wanted to get the word out there. So Susanna Hoffs, Jimmy Jam, Brad Paisley, who's one of my closest friends, who I needed a guitar god to talk about Prince as a guitar god, Taylor Locke from the band Rooney.
Amazing.
Formerly of Rooney. We did a little pop-up podcast because – I love podcasts.
Yeah, so Rock Solid Podcast is a lot of fun. And you and I are supposed to do a Bob Dylan one, which I look forward to.
Yes, that would be
Let great. On the Tracks.
Oh, yeah.
In a way, I feel like it's all been said about that, but it's still one of my favorite albums of all time. And how about you? Because now you know Bob Dylan. I mean, what is that?
I've had the pleasure of meeting him, but I don't know if anyone knows Bob Dylan. Although his most recent songs make me feel like I know him. This Murder Most Foul, I feel like I'm in his head at all times now. But I think maybe we should come up with an alternative. We'll just force Pat to do Dan Fogelberg or something else.
Know a lot, and you know what's scary there? I know a lot about him.
That's why.
Now next week I sent in a little snippet about Sting. I also was a huge Sting fan, not as much anymore, but that night that I came down to the Shrine, he was also on stage. And so do you know him then?
Do I know what?
You know him, Sting.
Yeah, yeah.
And were you ever a fan of his music, the solo stuff? I mean, at least obviously, but the solo stuff, he was great.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a Sting fan, and I'm in that episode too. I called in a song. In fact, I had a meeting with him a couple of years ago, and I discovered a song, a recent song of his that I love. I'll tell you. Well, you have to listen to Pat's podcast because I don't want to undermine the huge commercial value of having me on that podcast. But no, I was actually driving to his house and discovered this song, and I got there and I said, "This is the greatest song," and he went, "You're right,
David. That is." Unbelievable. I mean, just that little story you just said. It's just funny. Look, well, you and I, you're from Jersey. I'm from Pittsburgh. It's all very similar. And, you know, when you say I was just driving to Sting's house and then, you know, it's just cool. It's very cool. And so you just played one song.
That's why I dropped the name for that exact reason.
I played two songs on the podcast. And if he cuts one, he'll be cut. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Anyway, it'll be fun to listen to. So when Prince passed away, obviously it was the biggest shock to you as anyone. I mean, obviously everybody was shocked.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I'm glad you asked that because there's a story about that too.
Good.
Because I was at a big production company working on a music show when we were in a boardroom having a meeting. And that's when everyone's phones started blowing up with this someone died at Paisley Park and all this. And it was just horrible. And I was sitting there just sort of like in a meeting, tearing up. And I got an email or a text, I don't remember, saying, "Anderson Cooper wants you to come on tonight to talk about Prince." And my wife, I had already talked to, I walked out of the meeting and told her about Prince. And she said, "Don't do any television the day someone dies." She goes, "I hate when you go on, you know, and talk about someone. It seems terrible to go on right away. Like, you got to let it go for a couple of days." And then after that, I got the note from Anderson Cooper's producer, and I called her back and I said, "Okay, I'm turning down Anderson Cooper." She goes, "No, never turn down Anderson Cooper." Like, she loves Anderson Cooper,
as do I.
And she said, "You goddamn go on Anderson Cooper." And I went on, and the next day they called me back and said, "Anderson would like you to come back on." And my wife said, "You do it." And then Anderson wasn't the host. He had that substitute host on.
Yeah, oh,
and my wife was like, "You should have walked off." So my wife's moral argument only was very specific to, you'd never do it unless it's Anderson Cooper.
Yeah, see, there's some caveats. I feel like there'll be a few other people. Who else would you definitely do no matter what?
I do what I'm told.
You would do Lester Holt, yes.
Well, I did once do Brian Williams at the last minute when he was on. I think it was he might have been on MSNBC the first time before he was on. You know, now he's back. But yeah. Brian Williams once called me, or they called me at the producers. I was at the Rolling Stone office, and they said, "Can you come talk about the last episode of Seinfeld?" I think it was.
Yeah, because you wrote a book about it, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. And so I went from the office and drove to the studio and did that. And on air, he made fun of me wearing like I just wearing a black T-shirt because I didn't know I was going on Brian Williams, but he called me out. So I still like for years I didn't watch him, but now I do.
I'm so sorry.
I forgive him.
See, I didn't know that personal, that personal anecdote about him. A lot of people didn't watch him because of that whole helicopter situation.
Oh yeah, lying. No, I'm okay with lying.
You don't forget when you were on a helicopter. Like, I don't care how big you are. Like, a helicopter is very specific.
Yeah, but you know what? In terms of lying, there've been bigger lies.
Isn't that the truth?
More powerful people.
Every day is I wake up and I check Twitter and it's just new horrors every day. And you just can't trump it, as it were.
Yes, literally.
And everything that's happening is something that you would have said, like, get the fuck out of here, like 6 months ago.
Yep. Well, I don't want to say that his name, but I did work with him. I had two. When Bob Dylan had his 30th anniversary concert tribute show at Madison Square Garden, which there's a DVD and an album I wrote liner notes for, where Bob Dylan told me no adjectives. So I had to write notes without adjectives. But at the after party was at an Irish bar owned by one of the chieftains, I think. Yeah, one of the chieftains.
Wow.
And I was standing next to Donald Trump for the first time then. And then cut to I was working as one of the writers on the Emmys, and we did a thing called Emmy Idol, because American Idol was a pretty new thing at that point. And we had celebrities to sing and compete in a jokey way. And Donald Trump at that point was just enough of a star to barely get on singing Green Acres with Megan Mullally. And truth be told, he did a decent job, much better at that than like at foreign policy or domestic policy. When the most amazing moment was having worked on this little dumb segment many years ago, when he passed a farm bill a couple, like whatever that was, a year and a half ago,
yeah.
he tweeted it out, like, you know, footage of him and Megan Mullally doing Green Acres. And I'm like, I cannot. If you had told me any of this back then, I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah. Everything that is happening, it's just surreal. We're in a really strange place in our history. It's all going to be in the books. Are your kids out of college or they're in college?
I have one in college, but now back in my home, which is why I'm back in my bedroom doing this so that I don't have to. He doesn't have to hear me telling my same stories.
but he can just be at school online. Yes.
Yeah,
that's good. That's helpful.
And my other son graduated and is working in LA. So
wonderful. I'm glad to know everybody's safe and everybody's home. Now, have you been listening to more music? I just got these new headphones, so I'm listening to so much music. I can't even tell you.
I think I've been listening, other than Prince, I've been listening to. People who follow me on Twitter will know that I tend to go on long walks and listen to music and podcasts. But other than that, I think I'm probably listening to a little less because there's more people in the house than normal. And I usually, as a writer, I'll play music. I actually today had a discussion with my son because my first these online interviews, you know, I don't want to say what we're using, but there's many things that people are using. And the first time, I've never really used that. I've always sort of done things in person.
Of course.
But like my first one during this pandemic was with the two surviving Beastie Boys and Spike Jonze for this new Beastie Boys movie. They asked me to write something with them and interview them. And then I did one with Susanna Hoffs and Jimmy Jam and Brad Paisley. And I done them both. Like I literally am doing them in my, it's amazing what you can do in your bedroom now. Oh, but the thing musically, like today
you
I had a
good David.
Yes, exactly. And today I had to write like a treatment up for some TV project.
Sure.
And I put on the Beastie Boys Paul's Boutique and Out My Love. And I realized, oh boy, hip hop is terrible to write to when you're trying to write.
Oh, no. Yeah, there's too many words flying at you.
And yeah. I realized, and during this pandemic, I don't think I normally do. I'm listening to much more instrumental music because I can work better
you
with that.
You need background music. You can't, and especially podcasts can be hard to focus on. And, you know, podcasting, our stats have changed because there's no commute time anymore. So I'm seeing my listeners. Hi there, listeners. I see those guys, you know, listening kind of at different times, more at home, not as much on phones.
Right.
Yeah.
Any way they want to listen. I think anything that gets people through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I miss concerts as well. I go to a lot of shows. I don't go to the smaller shows as much, but I definitely love the Hollywood Bowl and the Greek and, you know, yeah, it's a real drag. Hey, Anderson Cooper, by the way, one of the greatest guys in the world. I don't know him, but he just seems like the greatest guy in the world. And did you see yesterday he was talking with the mayor of Las Vegas? And it was a split screen like you and I are on. And at one point, he's just like, he just put his hands right over his face like, I can't. I just can't.
No. And it brought me back because my journey on this into the – my last thing I did before – the last show I could do before everything went stop was I did first a breast cancer benefit called An Unforgettable Evening that Tom Hanks – Rita Wilson, Tom Hanks – Kate Capshaw and Steven Spielberg sort of spearhead this annual dinner event.
Were they
and,
there?
Well, Rita was there, and I was working with, and
but
so
were you hugging her?
Well, here's the thing: my weird journey was so I had I did that show, and then I think she went to Australia the next day with Tom, and I'm home about to go to Vegas for the last show I did, which was a organization called Keep Memory Alive, Alzheimer's benefit that's near and dear to my heart because of my father. And that was honoring Neil Diamond, who's one of my heroes. And so I was all packed. And then we heard the story came out about Tom and Rita. And I didn't know. And I had a little cold.
Oh,
and and then I went to Vegas, you know, this is because it was not clear what you were really supposed to do. But I decided, OK, I'm going to just go do the show and hang back. But I got a little sicker as I was there and I felt achy and, you know, and I went back to my room and then I came home and my wife got it.
Oh, my God.
We don't know. I haven't been tested. And I'm hoping that we had it. But I'll tell you how bad at that point I was so scared that Jimmy Kimmel was the host of this event where Neil Diamond was honored in Vegas. And he said to me, we were talking about how my friend Brad Paisley was going to be on his Millionaire, How to Be a Millionaire show, which is airing right now. But the next week, they were taping the last episode. Brad was on it, going to be on it. And he said, oh, are you going to be his expert? Because on this show, the celebrities get an expert. And so then Brad and I discussed it. And Brad goes, yeah, I want you to be my expert. And this is the only time, with all the name dropping and self-promotion I do, I had to call him and go, at that point, it was beginning to all look so serious. I said, I cannot be around you. Because at this point, with my wife having this cold, me having this cold, having been around Rita, and I can't. So that's how scary this disease is.
While it has saved perhaps country music, we don't know.
Well, and Brad in the end, Brad stayed home in Nashville and said, "I can't fly in and do this because it's not responsible." So that was how serious that was. So that's sort of what got me to finally stay home.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad that you did because you are on the road all the time. And so, or if you're not on the road, you're in places where there's a lot of people.
Yeah, I am like someone who gets claustrophobic and is always in places that are crowded with people. So but I miss it. Like I miss it. I'm always in New York. I should have been in New York. I work on the upfronts, which are not really happening in New York.
They must be doing something digital, right?
Yeah, they'll do something digital. I was supposed to be.
So you're still working, essentially, yes?
on a number of things, Brad Paisley and the CMAs. I'm always in Nashville. I completely miss Nashville more than I miss like other cities, because that's like a second home.
Yeah. Oh wow. Yeah, it's really interesting. Everybody is everybody's like on an even playing field, you know. Have you seen some of the concerts at home, and can you recommend any? Like Richard Marx has been doing stuff, and everybody, right?
Everyone, you know, there's so many of them. Like as a guy from Jersey, I felt connected last night. There was the one that Bruce and other people did from Jersey, and that.
Oh yeah, nice. I love all those Jersey people. Yeah. How fun!
Yeah,
yeah, that's exciting. Good. Yeah. Well, listen, I really appreciate you talking to me today. I mean, this is like I can't thank you enough, because I know you are busy, even though we're quarantined. Actually, I heard we're not quarantined. I heard we're self-isolating.
They say we are.
There's a difference.
We're bending the curve.
That's right. We're bending the curve. That's what matters. Yeah. All right. Listen, David, you're the best. And I want to wish you all the, you know, obviously health and keep working. And I can't wait to get back to concerts. And hopefully I'll see you out there somewhere this summer. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yes, that would be great. That would be good. There's no tennis.
Dude, they have zip-tied the courts, because they know people like me and my partner, Matt Oswalt, will play. Like no matter what, Griffith Park is closed, right? Everything is closed. Matt Oswalt is texting me every single day saying, "Are they playing? Are they playing?" I'm like, "No, nobody's playing." All right, you guys, I want to thank again my guest today, David Wild. Thank you so much, friend. Honestly, this is great.
My pleasure.
You have amazing firsthand knowledge on a lot of stuff I like.
I try to have knowledge.
I'll see you over at the Rock Solid Show in one form or another.
That would be great.
All right, you guys. On behalf of David Wild, thank you so much again. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.